Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today's speaker will be Jody Farhat, Chief of the Missouri River Water Management Office of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The topic of her presentation will be the Missouri River Flood of 2011. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, July 21st, 2011, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Gary Willis, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Heavy rains in the upper Missouri Basin states and a huge mountain snowpack have caused unprecedented amounts of water to accumulate behind the dams on the Missouri River. It has forced the Corps of Engineers to release water in such quantities that it has caused flooding downriver from the dams. Today we have Jody Farhat, Chief of Water Management Office of the Corps of Engineers, to explain the dam systems and procedures of the Corps. I welcome you this afternoon.
Well, thank you all very much. It's my pleasure to be here. As was mentioned, I'm Jody Farhat. I'm Chief of the Corps of Engineers Missouri River Basin Water Management Office, and my staff and I regulate the six Corps of Engineers dams on the main stem of the Missouri River. So this is a map of the Missouri River Basin. It's 529,000 square miles, and it shows the location of the six dams. They extend from Fort Peck in eastern Montana, Garrison in central North Dakota, and then Owyhee Big Bend and Fort Randall in South Dakota, and then Gavin's Point along the Nebraska-South Dakota border. And we operate the system of reservoirs for eight congressionally authorized project purposes. Flood control is the purpose that we'll be focusing on today. And I'd like to always point out that flood control is the only of these authorized purposes that requires empty space in the reservoirs. All of the other project purposes listed require us to either hold the reservoirs or hold water in the reservoirs or release that water for downstream purposes. And those include hydropower, navigation, irrigation, recreation, fish and wildlife, water supply, and water quality. The main stem system is an incredibly large system of reservoirs. Three of the dams, Fort Peck, Garrison, and Owyhee, are the three largest Corps of Engineer dams in the United States. And even Fort Randall, which is one of what we consider our small dams, is the fifth or sixth largest Corps of Engineer dam in the country. If you took the storage in those six reservoirs and wrapped it into one, they would contain a total of 73 million acre-feet of storage. And the storage is divided into different zones to help serve those authorized purposes. The bottom 25% of the storage is what we call the permanent pool. And that's storage that's reserved for sediment storage and also provides minimum heads for hydropower and minimum pools for fisheries and water intakes. The largest portion of the reservoir storage, 53% of the total storage, is what we call the carryover and multiple use zone. And that storage is designed to serve those seven authorized purposes that require either the storage of water or the release of water during an extended period of drought like that of the 1930s. Above that, we have the carryover multiple use zone, which is 16% of the total system storage, and that's the desired operating level of the reservoirs. We would like to begin each runoff season at the base of this zone and then fill into that zone as the plains and mountain snowpack comes off, and then meter that water out to serve those authorized purposes during the remainder of the year. The very top portion of the flood control of the storage in the reservoir systems is what we call our exclusive flood control. That brings us up to the top of the gates at each of the six dams, and that is storage that's reserved exclusively for flood control. When we get the reservoirs into this zone, we try to release water as soon as downstream conditions permit. Where this flood control storage is also located is also very important. Most of the flood control storage is in the upper three projects, Fort Peck, Garrison, and Owyhee. Fort Randall Dam also has a significant amount of flood control storage with about 14% of the total storage. It's important to note a lot of folks in this area always are interested in the levels at Gavin's Point Dam, and Gavin's Point really has very little storage in it at all. At the current rate of release, we are replacing the water in that reservoir every day and a half. That gives you some sense of how small that reservoir is. And it's generally used just to level out the flows so that we have a steady water level in the lower river. Big Bend Dam is the other very small dam, and it's generally used for hydropower peaking. We get runoff from three primary sources in the Missouri River Basin. The plain snowpack generally comes off in the months of March and April and makes up about 25% of an average year's runoff. We get the mountain snowpack in May, June, and July, and it generally totals about half of an annual year's runoff. And then rainfall can occur anytime throughout the basin. We're anticipating that the runoff in 2011 will be a record runoff event, 57.7 million acre feet, and about 20% higher than our previous record runoff, which was 49 million acre feet in 1997. We have historic records on runoff in the Missouri River Basin that go back to 1898, and the basin has moved through extended periods of drought and high water years. And just a few years ago, this basin was going through the most severe drought from 2000 to 2007 that had been experienced since the reservoir system was in place. We're in many years, we're able to maintain our operation in the annual flood control multiple use zone. But then when we go through periods of extended drought, like from 1989 to 1992, and then again from 2000 to 2007, we dip into that bank account, that carryover multiple use zone. And surprisingly, just a little less than 4.5 years ago, the reservoir system was at a record low of 33.9 million acre feet. Earlier this month, we set a record high since the system was built with 72.8 million acre feet. So the Missouri River Basin has been subject to extreme hydrology in the last decade. Now I'm going to go on and talk a little bit about how we got to the situation that we are in today. My office monitors the mountain snowpack and the plain snowpack throughout the winter. The plain snowpack peaked around the late February timeframe. There was very heavy snow in the northeastern part of Montana, throughout the state of North Dakota, and in the northeastern part of South Dakota as well. So we have, you know, monitored throughout the winter. We knew that this was out there and that it would be coming into the reservoir system. But we had evacuated all of last year's runoff, and we were well prepared to handle this year's runoff. We also monitor the mountain snowpack. We look at two reaches. We look at the reach above Fort Peck, which is the upper Missouri River Basin, and then the reach between Fort Peck and Garrison, which is primarily the Yellowstone Basin. And throughout the winter period, the mountain snowpack tracked a little bit ahead of normal, about 110 to 115% of normal, but nothing to be alarmed with. That's until about the middle part of April. The snowpack normally peaks around April 15th, and about that time, the snowpack really skyrocketed and ended up peaking in early May, a couple weeks later than normal, at 135 to 140% of normal. But even at this point, knowing that we had this now huge mountain snowpack to come into the reservoir system, we were still prepared. We knew we were going to have a big runoff year. We were going to have releases that were quite a bit higher than normal, but certainly nothing record-setting. And then came the rainfalls in the month of May. It began in May, I guess. The eastern part of Montana received incredible amounts of rain over a couple weeks in the latter half of May. Initially, a round of widespread 2 to 3 inch rains, followed the next weekend by a widespread area of 5 to 8 inches of rain, and then additional rain the next weekend. This is an area of the basin that is normally quite arid. They, on an average annual basis, get around 12 to 14 inches of rain, and many areas in eastern Montana receive that much in a couple weeks. Many areas receiving, you know, 300 to 400% of normal May precip during that month, and also extended into the western part of the Dakotas and into northern Wyoming as well. So this rainfall came into the reservoir system, basically used up the remaining storage that we had set aside to manage the mountain snowpack, which has now continued to accumulate, hasn't begun to melt, and is poised to come into the system. Our runoff in May, it was the highest May runoff on record, 1.5 times the previous May record, and the second wettest month at that time on history in the basin, going back to when our precise record keeping began in 1898. So really an incredible month, just the month of May. And then came June, and we thought May was something, but June blew that out of the water. June, the heavy rains continued across Montana and the Dakotas, beginning in Montana and then moving southward throughout the month. And again, we saw areas with many areas with 6 to 8 inches of rain just in the single month. So June runoff was the wettest single month on record dating back to 1898. We received 13.8 million acre feet of runoff in the month of June. That was on the heels of the 10.5 million acre feet that we got in May, which now got bumped into third place. And together, those 2 months, we got almost a whole year's runoff in just a two-month period, 24.3 million acre feet combined runoff during that period. And we're planning that this above normal fork rainfall and runoff will continue throughout the remainder of the year. Basically, the basin is saturated; every pothole is full, all the tributary dams are full, and so we're anticipating that this much above normal runoff will continue throughout the year. So, what did we forecast? And we get a lot of questions right now about, why didn't you release more water sooner? 2010 was the third wettest year on record. And it's important to note that we evacuated 100% of that flood control storage, and we had the full flood control capacity of the main stem reservoir system available at the start of this runoff event. And also, I'd like to note that the volume of flood control storage in the main stem reservoir system has always been about 16.3 million acre feet. It hasn't changed throughout history as we updated the manual to operate for endangered species or anything. We've always had 16.3 million acre feet of runoff. And until this year, that volume of runoff or that volume of storage space in the reservoirs was sufficient to handle the runoff without releases that in and of themselves create flood damages, as we've seen this year. This is the first year that we've ever had that. And looking back at what did we know and when did we know it, on the 1st of April, we had forecast 33.8 million acre-feet of annual runoff, somewhat above normal, but we were looking at summer releases just slightly above normal in the range of 39 to 45,000. An average release during the summer is probably around 35,000 cubic feet per second. Then by May, when we had seen that mountain snowpack skyrocket and end up around 135 to 140% of normal, our forecast was updated, and we were looking at very high releases from Gavin's Point in the range of the upper 50,000 CFS, but still below the historic records. Our record releases from Gavin's Point Dam were 70,000 set in 1997. And then, we continually update the forecast as we move through the season. And by June 1st it was in late May that we realized we would have to go to record releases out of Gavin's Point Dam, which initially we started at 160,000 and eventually had to go to 160,000. So that's how we forecast. And so you can see at no time prior to that rain in May did we see a need to evacuate additional flood water. And the other thing that's important is that during that period in April and May, we had very high stages on the Missouri River below the Platte River. Most of the Missouri River from the Platte River down to almost Kansas City was above flood stage during that period. So we were operating the reservoir system to provide flood control in that area. Same thing up in the Bismarck area. The river was frozen until about the 20th of March, and so we were managing releases at that time to prevent flooding in the communities of Bismarck and Mandan during that early time frame. So what actually happened? Well, we had this unprecedented runoff. As I mentioned, June was the single wettest month on record, on the heels of the third wettest month on record, and together nearly a year's annual runoff in those 2 months. The other thing I like to do here is what I would call dispelling myths and rumors, because we've We've really worked throughout this event to get good information out to the public. We've set up a joint information center, set up websites and Twitter and Facebook. We're all over trying to get the best possible information out to the public. But still, there are a lot of rumors going around. And the first one that we talk about is that, for some reason, flood control wasn't high on our list this year. It's simply not true. We haven't made any release decisions this year that weren't based on flood control. You know, we were coming out of a very wet year last year. We continued our evacuation through the winter period. And all of our decisions this year were based on flood control. There's a group of people who believe that the reason that we're having these very high releases on Missouri right now is because for some reason we must have operated this reservoir system to prevent flooding on the Mississippi when they had their flooding. And the Missouri River Mainstem System, which was authorized in the 1944 Flood Control Act, recognizes that operation of this reservoir system will provide incidental benefits to the Mississippi River, but we're not authorized to operate solely for the benefit of the Mississippi River. So we are in constant contact with our sister districts along the Mississippi River. We coordinate with them on a daily basis and let them know what our release plans are for the coming period so that they can work it into their forecasts. But we don't operate these reservoirs specifically for the Mississippi River. The other rumor that is very prevalent is that somehow our operation for terns and plovers or pallid sturgeon created this flood event. And the master manual went through a 14-year process from 1989 to 2004 to revise the master manual. And throughout that period, we looked at hundreds of alternatives. We had literally hundreds of public meetings, took comments from folks throughout the basin, and rewrote the master manual. And we ended up with exactly the same amount of flood control storage being operated in the same way as it always has been. So the operation for terns and plovers and pallid sturgeon did not play any role in this year's flooding. In fact, according to the master manual, we would do a bimodal spring pulse from Gavin's Point Dam, one in March and one in May, in order to help out the endangered pallid sturgeon. Neither one of those pulses were run this year because the lower river is too high. The criteria includes precludes that cancel the spring pulse if the lower river is running high, which it was this year. And then we also informed the Fish and Wildlife Service in late April that we would not be operating for terns and plovers this year as we normally do because we were going to be in a flood evacuation mode. So, again, no operations this year were directed because of our endangered species operation. We've had lots of rumors that there are problems at the dams. The dams are safe, very safe. They've been operated this year in a historic way. We've set record pools at several of the reservoirs. We've had record releases at all of them. We've used two spillways that we have never used before. Up at Garrison and Big Bend, we have spillways that had never been operated until this year. And the dams are performing in an outstanding way. We have no issues. They are certainly suffering a little wear and tear, as you would expect, some erosion below the structures. When we use outlet tunnels, we know that we'll have to go in and do some repairs to fix some cavitation. But overall, they're doing good. And we have shut down some of these facilities during the flood event to do quick inspections to make sure that there are no problems developing. And everything has come out very good. So the dams are operating as designed and performing in an outstanding manner. And then the last one is the question that we always get about why didn't you release more water earlier? And again, I'd like to point out that, you know, we always base our regulation on the best available information we have. We don't base it on long-term forecasts because, as we know, the weather forecasts, you know, for the next couple of days is kind of a crapshot sometimes. So we don't want to base the reservoir forecast on or the reservoir operation on a long-range forecast. So we wait until we see the information on the ground, and that's why we monitor the plain snowpack and the mountain snowpack. We have models that we can input observed precip and a few days of forecasted precip, but really the reservoir system is based on actual conditions. And so based on the information that we had at the time we had it, we had no reason to go to much higher releases during the spring. And you know, this is a historic runoff event. And the fact that we've been on these very high releases since early June, I think we reached 100,000 on Gavin's on about the 10th of June, and about the 14th of June, we made it to 150,000. We've run those releases for about 6 weeks now, and just now are beginning to gain some available storage space in the reservoirs. Just within the last week have the reservoir levels been going down. And we did use over 99% of the total flood control storage available in the system. We set record pools at Fort Peck and at Oahe, and really maximized the flood control capacity of the main stem system. Next. So now the question is, where do we go from here? And this is what my staff and I and others in the Omaha and Kansas City districts have been working on very hard in the last week or two. We stored 16 million acre feet of flood water in the reservoir system. That water needs to come out before next year so that we'll be prepared for whatever 2012 brings. And we're looking at a variety of different ways to evacuate this flood water. There are those who say run these releases high until you can go down to a very low release, because that would allow us the longest possible time to go in there and inspect and repair. There are others who would feel that if we could cut back our releases and hold a steady release clear through December, that would take the pressure off the levees immediately and may not allow you time to do any inspection and repair this fall, but it would reduce the immediate risk. So we're looking at all those alternatives, and there are many factors that we're taking into consideration. The first thing from a water management standpoint is we need to get the exclusive flood control zone of the main stem reservoirs evacuated as soon as possible. Once we get each of the reservoirs down, you know, 3 or 4 feet, we'll have some measure of breathing room there so that we could handle another rainfall event. You know, when you have the reservoirs this high, any single rainfall event, a big thunderstorm, could change our releases. And that's what we saw when we increased our releases from 150,000 to 160,000. We had about a two-day period of rain in the drainage basin between Oahe and Fort Randall Dam that utilized the available storage we had there, you know, in just a couple days, and it resulted in us increasing our releases. So if we had had additional storage there, we wouldn't have had to increase our releases. So right now, our top priority is get a couple feet available in each of these reservoirs. The other things that we're looking at is we would like to have those fall releases low enough so that we can get in and inspect and repair. There's going to be damage up at the projects. We know that. There's a lot of erosion. We're going to have to go in and work on the spillways and the tunnels. And so if we can have low releases this fall, we can start that process earlier. And then also in the lower basin here, there are many levees that have been damaged, many non-federal levees that have been breached or overtopped, and even the federal levees have suffered some degree of damage, and a few have breached. And so in order to get this system back into shape for next year, we would like the releases this fall to be low enough to go in and do the inspections and start developing the designs so that we can get on the ground in the winter and start doing the repairs. The other thing is we have to have the releases during the winter period, December, January, and February, low enough that we don't have ice-induced flooding, and also low enough that they can work on the levees during the winter period. The other things that we're watching are to ensure that the rates of change in the releases and in the reservoir levels are not too dramatic. For example, we had put out a release schedule, and we had Fort Randall Reservoir dropping about 3 feet a week, and the Folks that are familiar with that project said that's probably a little too fast. 2 feet a week would be better. And the reason is those soils are saturated, and if the water comes down too quickly, then you get a lot of bank sloughing and erosion. The same thing is true in the river channel below the reservoirs and down here in this area. If the water comes down too quickly, you don't allow time for it to come out of the banks, and you end up with a lot of sloughing. So that's one of the factors we're considering. We've also we want to be aware of the releases that will take water off some of the critical infrastructure that's been affected by this flood event. We have Interstate 29 closed. Many of the bridges over the Missouri River are closed. The Fort Calhoun nuclear plant is offline because of flooding. So we're aware of all those issues. There are even some just a lot of property in the floodplain that is being impacted by this flooding. So we need to get these releases down so that we can start the recovery of the floodplain. We're also looking at releases that negate the use of some of those features of the dams, like the outlet tunnels and the spillways. Since we know we're going to have to do repairs up there, we want to have the releases low enough that we can begin those repairs this fall. And the last thing that I have listed here, and there are many more things that are going into this scenario development, is releases that allow us to remove the temporary measures. As I mentioned earlier, the Omaha District has built miles and miles of levees in Bismarck, North Dakota, Mandan, North Dakota, and Pierre and Fort Pierre, and in the Sioux City area to protect these communities from these very high releases. And so we're cognizant of the releases that we need to get water off those temporary measures so that those communities can start recovering from the flood event as well. I believe that's all I have. Welcome your questions. Thank you.
Okay, we've got some questions that are coming up. We'll start with what we have right now. Could you talk about the priorities with regards to releases? And this is in regards to navigation, electrical generation, and flood control.
Okay. As I mentioned, all of the release decisions made this year were looking at flood control. In general, our releases during the summer months are focused around providing navigation flow support and water supply for the lower stretch of the river. But when we knew we were going to be evacuating floodwater this year, then those did not come into play as much. And in terms of hydropower, hydropower is actually almost a byproduct of our operation of the Mainstem Reservoir System. All of the six dams have hydropower facilities associated with them, but releases are set in order to move water between the dams or to meet downstream needs, and so we run that water through the power plants, but it doesn't drive the release decisions.
Just from projections, can you tell what the time frame would be regarding the river drops to below flood stage in and around the Omaha area?
As I mentioned, we're working on our evacuation scenarios right now, floodwater evacuation scenarios. And we hope to have an announcement of those within the next week or so. And once we have settled on a plan, then we'll be able to provide better information on when the river will fall below flood stage here. But our current forecast goes out into the first few days of August, and we do show starting to step down releases there. Even as we reduce the releases, it'll be some period of time before the river gets back into the channel. We have thousands of acres of farmland between here and Gavin's Point Dam that are flooded, and all that water has to move back in, so we won't see immediate changes even as we begin to reduce our releases.
Is the Corps responsible for all of the levees?
No. The Corps, there are some federal levees that are built and maintained by the Corps of Engineers, very few of those. There are quite a number of federal levees that we built, and then we turn over to a local sponsor to operate. And then we have levees that are in what we call the PL 8499 program that are are eligible for some federal assistance if they're damaged during the floods. And then there are also many non-federal levees that are neither built by us nor maintained or in that PL 8499 program.
Could you explain how the cleansing of the river this year may prevent or minimize future floods?
I'm not certain that any changes to the channel as a result of these high releases will prevent any future floods. We have seen some areas of the channel that have had some degradation due to the high flows, but in general that sediment is deposited somewhere else, so we probably have other reaches of the river that are being negatively impacted by these very high releases.
This is kind of a repeat, but they were was asked that if you could address the complaint that there could have been a larger drawdown behind the dams that would have accommodated the extra runoff and prevented downstream flooding. Could you kind of touched on that a little bit? Do you have anything to add?
Well, I could add one thing. As I mentioned, you know, we've always had about the same volume of runoff or volume of storage reserved for flood control, about 16 million acre feet. And during that master manual revision, we looked at alternatives that had additional flood control storage. But remember, flood control is the only one that requires empty space. So when you provide additional flood control storage, then you're taking away service to those other authorized purposes. So that those alternatives were not selected in that process.
Okay. Do you feel, did most of the entities do a good job of keeping flooding from being much worse?
We've had great cooperation with the states and the counties and local governments on, making sure that they were prepared for this flood event, and we're working with them. It's really more the Omaha and Kansas City districts that deal directly with them in their emergency services, but great cooperation throughout the basin.
Question is, what do you say to farmers and other ones that are flooded downstreams as regard as time frame as far as getting back into their fields and just damage done?
Well, certainly, you know, we extend our regrets to those folks whose lives and livelihoods are impacted by this flood event. And, you know, for those that are flooded out this year who actually have water on their farm fields, you know, they won't get back into those fields this year. And so that's another thing that we're taking into consideration as we develop these release scenarios is to get the releases down low enough this fall so that we can get good drainage and get rid of some of that groundwater so that they won't be impacted next year.
This is in regards to an article that was in the Omaha World Herald, spokesman for the Corps. He had stated that nuclear plants aren't being factored into the schedule of dam releases. Would the releases be reduced if the nuclear plants were at risk of flooding and possible meltdown?
I think, you know, the article that was in the paper, perhaps it wasn't stated quite right. What we said is that we have not operated for them this year, and we have not been asked to. You know, our releases that we had scheduled did not impact their ability to maintain the safety of those plants. And certainly if there was a real emergency at one of those plants, you know, we've been in constant contact with OPPD and NPPD and also with the NRC. So, you know, we would take that into consideration and consider changes. But to date, we haven't been asked to make any release changes based on those nuclear power plants.
At this point, are you dealing with runoff or snowpack? Could you break down the normal snowpack melt and the time frames?
Right. The snowpack, we get plain snowpack generally in the months of March and April, and in general it makes up about 25% of our annual runoff. We get the mountain snowpack in May, June, and July, and it normally makes up about 50% of our annual runoff. Right now, what we're doing is we have captured a lot of that runoff, both from the plain snowpack, the mountain snowpack, and that very heavy rain. And so our business now is to evacuate this flood control storage and be ready for next year.
What would have happened if there had been no dams? Would it have been worse than the 52 flood?
The We haven't run all of the modeling that we need to compare what the releases would have been if the dams hadn't been in place. But our preliminary modeling shows that here in Omaha, it would have been at least as bad as that. And overall, the volume of runoff is much higher than in 1952.
Do you anticipate a change in the amount of storage available for flood runoff each year?
This gets back to the master manual question. And, you know, with this being a historic flood event, and the Corps of Engineers is part of the Army, as part of our normal process, we'll do an after-action review. You know, we operated the reservoir system in accordance with the manual. That manual went through an extended period of review, public review, 14 years. And this is a new data point. So we have to go back and study this event and determine whether it should lead to changes in the master manual. The reservoir storage, the flood control storage, was based on the design of the 1881 flood. And that was about 40 million acre feet in a five-month period from March through July. We're anticipating that our runoff this year in that same five-month period, March through July, will be about 46 million acre feet, or about 15% higher. So that begs the question, you know, now that we've seen this event, does it change the design of the flood control storage? And that's just one of the many questions that we'll be looking at as we do our post-flood assessment. And whether those studies lead to any changes in the master manual will remain to be seen. We'll certainly be getting a lot of input from throughout the basin on whether we need to make a change.
Do you have the funds to fix the levees or other structure damage? If not, how will you go about getting these funds?
Well, we don't have the money at hand. we are providing our headquarters estimates of what we think we might need, and it remains to be seen whether we'll get that money and whether we'll get it in time to get all the repairs completed.
Can you give us an example of a good floodplain management in developed areas that are acting as a holding area for water?
I can't, right off the top of my head, think of any specific examples, but I guess what I would say is, you know, anyone who lives in the floodplain, whether you're protected by a dam or a levee, there is some residual risk. And so, you know, what we would like to make sure that people understand is that if you are living there or doing business there, that you understand what that risk is. Ideally, from my viewpoint, we would have no development in the floodplain. Then we could make releases as we see fit without concern. But we know that that isn't economically justified today, and that people will always continue to live and build in the floodplain. And there are many facilities that need to be in this area, the water treatment plants and wastewater treatment plants and the energy, the power plants that use the river for cooling. So some things need to be in there. And certainly the farming on the floodplain, you know, very fertile land there, you know, so that's an appropriate use. But I think the important thing is that people understand that there is residual risk, even if you're protected by a levee or a reservoir system like we have.
Knowing what you know now, what would you do differently for next year? That's kind of reading into the future.
Well, I wish I had a better crystal ball is the thing. You know, this year, the unexpected was that very heavy rain in May. You know, if we had been able to see that coming, you know, certainly we would have tried to increase releases. But I think by the time that you know, by the time we could have had even a forecast of that May rain, it was too late to make any appreciable difference in the maximum releases that we finally ended up with. So, you know, I think better forecasting tools would be very helpful, you know, and, you know, just always utilizing the best information that we have.
Will the levees be repaired in time for next spring's flood season?
You know, that's a little outside my area of expertise. We have Colonel Bob Brook here, commander of the Omaha District, if he wants to speak to the levees.
Yeah.
Asked him to be here just for this question.
Okay. And I would have been here for the whole thing, but we were discussing these very drawdown schedules and the things that you're asking about. So we're working those issues very hard. The question of getting the levees back to the precondition, and once again, PL 8499, if you're part of the program and you're doing your job as a sponsor, well, then we come in to repair those levees. The question is how fast we can get the water evacuated off the levees to a point where we can actually get in there and do some damage assessment. Then we have to come up with an engineering plan to see what can be done. And there are some that could be damaged so bad that you'd have to set them back, and that would require real estate issues as well to get that land. So the bottom line is, first thing is to get the water off the levees, then get in there and do the assessments, and then we have to send those types of requirements up to our headquarters. We're not just waiting to do that. As Jody said earlier, we've been giving some thoughts on rough order of magnitude on how much this could cost, and we're getting that from governors, we're getting that from senators, from congressmen. My boss, General McMahon, sat with this caucus of senators, and General Grizzoli, who's head of civil works for the Corps of Engineers, sat with the caucus of senators on the Missouri River about a week or so ago and talked these very issues and started to talk about that rough order of magnitude for the type of repair we're going to need. And it's not just the levees. It's also getting the water off these large dam structures that have had high water on them, and making sure that they're ready to go next year as well.
Thank you. Go ahead. Go ahead. Forgot what I was doing here.
Do any lessons learned from this year's flood require congressional action?
Well, I think that would depend on whether or not our after-action reviews shows that we need to make any significant changes to the master manual. You know, Congress gave us that charge to serve those 8 authorized purposes. And if we were going to significantly impact any of those, then we may have to go back to Congress for some approval.
This we kind of touched on a little bit earlier. What would be the harm of releasing more water earlier in the season, just in case the worst scenario were to come true?
As I mentioned, you know, during the early part of the runoff year, we get flooding in the lower river as well, and also, you know, we're managing the plain snowpack at the same time. The water doesn't come just from Gavin's Point Dam, though, and I think that's an important issue because folks ask, you know, if you've seen this heavy plain snowpack and the snowpack in the mountains, why don't you start releasing more? And much of the river is covered by ice in the winter period, and we're very restricted on our ability to increase releases dramatically during the winter period. The ice flooding in the Bismarck area is a concern every year, and so we try to manage for that. And then, as I mentioned, this year we had very high flows here in the middle and lower stretches of the Missouri River. We had a lot of water coming out of the James Vermilion and Big Sioux. So, you know, we're trying to balance flood control through all aspects of the river basin, including the downstream areas and managing the reservoirs as well.
I can't ever sit and just listen. I'll throw something else on too. You know, people are informed by the past, and really the very recent past, if you kind of look at our history within this basin. So what is the recent past in this basin? The recent past in this basin has been drought. So if you were to come out as the Corps of Engineers and say, we feel that we need to release more water earlier than the annual operating plan that we published last year, there would be many different constituencies, which is what I say each one of these purposes has, that would say, you can't release that water now. Just in April, when Jody was going around on the spring AOP visits, first off, those visits were very poorly attended up and down the basin. We didn't get that much care and information back from the public. And there were people, and, you know, this is all part of the records, said, do not release our water. This could be the drought coming, the first year of a drought coming this year. So, as I say, people are informed by the recent past, and now they'll all have a new data point based on what can happen in a very heavy water year.
Also, Colonel, could you talk about what plans have been taken or put into place to protect the various communities that this is affecting?
I can. I mean, as early as that first week that we had, I guess after May 22nd, the heavy rains, we were very quickly talking with communities as we started to measure the inflows. And I don't know if we've answered questions on how the inflows went from 85 to 120 to 150, and eventually we got to 160, all based on the inflows you see coming into the system. But very immediately, the areas closest to dams were those that would be most quickly inundated as we had to bring the release schedules up. So Pier and Fort Pier are right below Oahe, and then we have Bismarck and Mandan. You know, these are state capitals we're talking about, you know, an hour south of Garrison Dam. And we began coming up with a strategy. There's a few things you have to look at when a community says we want to protect something. First off, the community has to tell us what they want to build a levee in front of. So they have to do their own. There's certain things they do themselves first. There's certain things that the state does themselves first. And then they say, we need help from the federal government to do this. Well, there has to be an engineering solution, or else we would, you know, if we could protect everything, we would. But that's just not feasible from an engineering standpoint. So you have to say, where is the high ground? In an engineering fashion, how can we get this mission done that you're asking us to? The second is the time available. And we had very limited time until we had to step up those releases, you know, particularly out of places like Oahe and Garrison. So that's also a very important part of the equation. And then third, under PL 8499, you can only protect public infrastructure. And, you know, I always want to take credit for protecting every house and all that's behind a levee, but we have to protect public infrastructure. So there were some communities that, you know, governments would love to protect. They have a high tax base. They're great people. You know, everybody wants to protect everything. But if there wasn't public infrastructure in there to protect, then we can't use that PL 8499. So they were kind of decisions that were made quickly. There's some communities that jumped on things themselves, like up in Dakota Dunes, and they started putting in a private levy. And we came in and put in an effort that augmented that as well. We were driven to a completely different circumstance down in Hamburg, where we had that series of partial breaches and eventually a full breach. And we knew once we had those partial breaches, and we continued to say, really, the efforts to shore this up are not going to work. This levee is going to go, and eventually it did. But we began initially, what can we do to save this town? And there was an existing federal levee back set close to the town. It wasn't to protect them from the Missouri River. It was set to protect them from what they called Ditch 6, which is an area they were flooded from before. And we said, if we add many, many feet to this, we have the opportunity to protect this town. And somebody asked about all the agencies to come together. Well, it became, when the full breach came, we realized we needed 3 more feet on top of what we were already constructing. And these are, it's a Herculean effort. It's an incredible amount of material that had to be added to this levee in time to be ready as that water was creeping across that floodplain. And so the Corps got contracts going. You had our geotech experts down on the ground helping to design that and to build that. We couldn't even get trucks in there because all the trucks were hauling grain out of grain elevators. So the company brought in a bunch of scraper pans. Well, how do you pull them? The local farmers came in and did that work on behalf of the contractor by hooking the scraper pans up to their tractors. The National Guard came in and built miles of HESCO along the highway. And these kids were out there 24 hours a day. I got down there the one day, and you know, a kid told me, our unit just called and said we have to leave, and we don't want to leave until this job's done. And you know, that's something to be proud of these great kids that are serving their country, either off in war or here in times of need. So that unit stayed and completed that job, and Hamburg is still dry based on that kind of effort. So that give you an idea of some of the things we've done up and down the river. We've also done work over here in Council Bluffs in Omaha to shore up levees that were either in a somewhat of a state of disrepair or just becoming saturated. There are places, you know, if you went up behind the airport or over into Council Bluffs where you walked up and we saw boils or seepage, you could literally stand on what you would call dry ground and feel like you were on a waterbed. And, you know, you don't sleep that night until the work is, you know, contracted and done to shore that area up. And we've got most of them done now. So, you know, we're we're slowly kind of gaining, but until we get the water off these levees, those areas will continue to pop up and continue to challenge us.
This is a question that goes back to the nuclear plant. This is regards to the one that was in Brownville, which is built at a higher elevation, the one at Fort Calhoun, which is lower. Did anyone, you know, when that was originally constructed, did anyone consult the Corps or anything, or was that taken into factor of potential flooding?
I'll take a shot at that. You know, the nuclear power plants were built after the Corps dams were constructed and the levees in this stretch of the river. And, you know, I can't say that we coordinated with them. I don't know for sure. Chet Worm is here. He's my former boss. Maybe he would be able to answer that question. But certainly, you know, they would have had the information on the flood protection that the city of Omaha was planning on. So it appears that they chose to build somewhat lower than that.
Could you talk about the master plan in regard to what it is, who puts it together, and how it can be changed if necessary?
Sure. The master manual is our document that guides the regulation of the main stem reservoir system. It is a Corps of Engineers document, and we can change it. It's a lengthy process when it is changed because all of these uses, all of those authorized purposes, have constituencies. And when you make a change for one authorized purpose, it has an impact on others. And that's why that former review of the master manual ended up taking 14 years. Not because it took us that long to study it, but because it took us that long to come to an agreement on how to best manage the reservoir system. So, you know, and again, as I mentioned, flood control is that only authorized project purpose that requires empty space. So if we decide, based on this flood event, that we're going to provide additional flood control storage, then we'll have less water available for navigation, we'll produce less hydropower, we'll have more severe impacts to recreation and water supply and fish and wildlife and recreation the next time we go through a drought. So it is a delicate balancing act. And, you know, the Corps feels like because this document has been well vetted in the public and, you know, that we always try to follow the master manual. And, you know, a lot of people would tell us, well, you know, you should just deviate and do things, you know, based on, you know, what other input that we might get. But we try very hard to stay within the realms of the master manual, because as the Colonel mentioned, you know, all of these purposes have interest groups, and they're watching all of our release decisions very closely and making sure that we serve their purpose in the way that was planned.
Okay, we're going to get pretty close to our last question. Is there a plan to create additional storage space in the future?
And again, that gets back to the master manual question. We will do a post-flood assessment where we will do a study to see if that reservoir design flood that sets the volume of flood control storage needs to be changed. And then if we decide or if Congress tells us to, you know, to look at the operation of the main stem reservoir system to prevent the catastrophic damages that would occur in this type of event, you know, then we'll go down that through that process to make the appropriate changes in the master manual. But it'll be a big public process, and we'll follow NEPA and result in consultation with the Fish and Wildlife. And, you know, it's not something that can be done overnight.
All right, thank you. I would like to thank Jody Farhat and Colonel Rook for attending their noon forum today. At this time, we are adjourned. Thank you.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Jody Farhat, Chief of the Missouri River Water Management Office of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The topic of her presentation was the Missouri River Flood of 2011. Ms. Farhat was joined during the question and answer session by Colonel Robert J. Rook, the District Commander of the Omaha District of the Army Corps of Engineers. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, July 21st, 2011, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. If you'd like to attend future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.